This meeting is now being recorded.
This is Ram Mohan, and this is the Technical Study Group on Access to Non-Public Registration Data. This is our sixth meeting on the phone, and today is Tuesday, 5th of February. On the agenda today really are just a couple of things. One was, that I'm suggesting anyway, is to finalize a requirements document, and then to discuss the face-to-face agenda for next week's meeting, and then perhaps to have a quick conversation about the methodology that we want to follow for doing the design work that we have scheduled and for building the technical model. So with that said, let's bring the requirements document up, and I'm going to pass the microphone to Andy and Scott so you could walk us through, you know, what you've done from last week and what we need to discuss and decide.
Okay. Well, this is Andy. I'm trying to bring up the email I sent to the group. Here we go. We basically took notes from the last meeting, the last week, and then added in some sections into the unified requirement. And the sections we added in are 2B, 2F, 3E, 3F, and 7B. And we can go through those real quick here. Let me bring it up. So, different window. I'm experiencing equipment spirit operator here. The 2B is the system must be able to associate attributes to the requester, and those attributes must be passed to the request. Must be passed by the requester to the ICANN RDAP proxy. 2F was the system must assign each requester with a unique identifier. 3E was the that can't be right. I think it's 4E. Sorry, the 4E. System may pass. The system may pass requester attributes C2B to the CPH RDAP servers. And I'm sorry about that. Yeah, it's 4E. And I'm going to assume 4F as well. The system must pass the requester identifier to the CPH RDAP servers. But one's a may and one's a must.
Okay. Andy, did you want to go through this one by one so we can talk to the team and see if they have any comments?
Let me just go with the update on 7B, which is that was the other one, which was the – I think this was John Brain's comment about the SLA commitments being made published. I don't think that's controversial. I think really the issue around assigning attributes to the requester and then having those passed to the RDAP servers. Is that what you wanted to do, Ram? Go through just have that a discussion about that in general.
Works for me. Scott, you have a hand up.
I do. Hey, Andy, I'm sorry, but looking at 1B, I think we're missing a word here. I think it should be where public data is stored by the CPHs and only transferred through ICANN, right? Because, you know, part of the model we've been describing does include provisions for requestors to request public data directly from the contract parties.
Did you say 1B?
Yes.
Okay.
Right. The system must support a distributed data model where data is stored by the CPHs and only transferred through ICANN. Right? And I think that should be where public data is stored and only transferred through ICAM. I'm sorry, non-public data.
Okay, yeah, that's what was confusing me. Okay.
Yeah, non-public data.
Yeah, I have no problems with that whatsoever. Anyone else have an issue with that? All right, I will type non-public right now. There we go. Are other people on the Google Drive, did they just see my change? I just want to verify that I am indeed modifying the correct document.
I am on the document, yep. But I don't see changes being done.
So 1B, do you see the words non-public data up there?
I don't see it.
Weird. All right, I'll figure out what's going on later. So any other questions?
Actually, I don't see you at all in the document.
Maybe I'm in the wrong place. I don't know. Actually, let me close this out. I will attempt to try it again here real quick. Go to Drive. Since that was a very small edit.
Sorry, I just put the link to the Google Doc in the chat.
There we go. Now I'm seeing other people. Okay. I've got better confidence that this is the right place. All right. Okay. That was what was throwing me. I wasn't seeing any other initials up at the top, but I believe I'm in the right place now. Okay. So, anything else? Anybody else have any questions? I see Francisco, was that what you were,
Yes. So, I think the non-public portion should be referred to the part that is transferred to ICANN. So I think what we want to say is the system must support a distributed data model. That's fine. There, where data, and this should be all the data, is stored by the CPH, and the non-public portion of that data is only transferred through ICANN. What do you guys think of something like that?
Is that what you want?
I think the only goes after the and non-public data is only transferred to ICANN, right?
Yeah, that's what I just put in. I said where the data is stored by the CPH is then only non-public data is transferred through ICANN.
Is that saying that the only way that the CPHs may never transfer any non-public data directly to a requester? Is that what we mean by that?
That's not how I would interpret that, no. Judy, I think that's a good question.
Well, it also tends to mean that if you want to get a complete response, you have to submit two queries. One for ICANN to return the non-public data, and then a second to some registry or registrar to get the public data. I don't think that's the intention. I was thinking if you send a query to ICANN, you get back a full response, you know, that contains both public and non-public data. Am I off base there?
I don't think you
are. No, I think we had already this conversation.
I see Benedict in the queue, but Francisco, did you want to respond to that?
Sure, just very quickly. Scott, you're right. We're not trying to change what we had already discussed. It's an issue of wording. I'm not sure how to fix it, but it's certainly not the intent to say that requesters have to do two queries to get the full data. That's not the intent.
Hey, folks.
Come in, Francisco. Who's next, Rom?
So Benedict is in the queue. So, but I think Andy, you were trying to respond to Francisco.
That wasn't me. I think that was Scott.
That was Scott, that was yes. Scott.
Go ahead, Scott. Why don't you finish, and then let's come back to you, Benedict.
Sure. So, Francisco, I think that the wording I originally proposed addresses that, where I think I said something like here, where data is stored by the contracted parties and non-public data is only transferred through ICANN.
That works for me.
Can you hear me? It's Benedict.
Yes, Benedict, go ahead.
Just to add a data point, and maybe Jermaine here. For the first time on the EPDP call today, when discussing reasonable access, I heard people saying, and I heard, including the chair, that they did not feel that this unified access model, which is, I think is intended to be what we're building, it is not intended to be the only source of data, and the team are envisioning that there will be.
Benedict, we lost about 10 seconds of the critical things. So we heard the EPDP, it's not going to be, and then I couldn't hear the rest of what you were trying to say. Would you please repeat yourself?
Okay, so I'm in Paris. Apologies, I've just arrived, and my signal seems a bit dubious. So just to clarify, I wanted to add a data point from what the EPDP team talked about today, and that is to say, for the first time, I heard people saying that they did not envisage that the unified access model would be the sole source of data, so that people were saying that they thought there would be alternative mechanisms for disclosing data perhaps bilaterally by registries and registrars. So that would seem to align with an RDAP implementation where the centralized ICANN system is providing access, full access, but that there are direct RDAP connections to registries and registrars. Now, that is by no means policy yet, but I just wanted to give this team a heads up that seems to be where people's minds are going.
Benedict, what do you, so I understand that. I think when we come back to you, it'll be useful for you to think about what you think the implications for us and on the design team might be. I can see a few things, but I don't want to go down that path until you're able to provide a little bit of clarity as to where you think the implications might be. I see Scott in the queue and then Jody.
Thanks, Ron. Scott Hollenbeck here. Yeah, and indeed, and to that point, it gets to the question I was, you know, trying to ask on Friday and earlier today, I think. Remember, Andy and I accepted a task to craft some introductory text for our technical model document. And one of the ways I wanted to approach that is to describe different model possibilities, if only to document that, you know, we are being good engineers and we are exploring different options here and perhaps pointing out pros and cons of each. But to Benedict's point, I think, you know, some of the model possibilities that I described, you know, include facilities, for direct interaction. And so anyway, I see benefit in documenting these possibilities and ensuring that we provide descriptions of how we can achieve these required functions independent of whatever model ends up being chosen as a result of policy decisions.
Scott, this is Ram. I guess from my perspective, we began, with the clear assumption that the unified access model is what we're going to look to go and solve for. My perspective at this point is that we should still be solving for that. Then we could, you know, if we are done with the design model, the technical model for that, then I think we could start to think about other models. But my perspective is that we should still attempt to solve this problem at hand first before we look at other problems. I'm not sure that you're saying we should not, I don't know that you're disagreeing with this, but I'm just trying to say the priority ought to be to finish up on the UAM first.
Yeah, no disagreement, Rob.
To clarify,
in fact, I think when you look at, you know, how much work is going to be involved, it's not going to be a huge delta between explaining, you know, technical solutions to solve particular requirements, because I think in many cases, you know, the applicability of how they fit in different models will be more a function of policy choice in the future as opposed to a policy that says do it this way and, you know, an omission on our part, if that makes sense. Because I think some of what we're going to be producing here is a menu that says to achieve this particular function, do this. And so the answer to if they choose the unified access model will be certain choices from the list. And if some other model is chosen, they'll have the same list, but they just might make some different choices.
That works for me. How about other folks on this list?
Sorry, I agree.
Okay, good. I don't hear any dissent, Scott, on what you're suggesting.
Just to clarify, I think we're all on the same page. The PDP isn't saying we can't go ahead and design a unified access model. I just think they're saying bear in mind that we should consider access direct to registries and registrars. And I think nothing that Scott is saying is contradicting that. It's more of a design requirement just to make sure that direct access is also not prohibited by whatever design we come up with.
Right. Got it. Thanks. Jody, you have your hand up. Old hand. All right. So I wanted to go back to something that that Francisco was talking about earlier, you know, on what we want to do about data and transfer. You know, this is with regard to 1B, and I would just want to reiterate just for our own group and for all of our to refresh all of our memories that our preferred model is to solve for a clean solution first. And that means that, of course, you know, we have some assumptions and constraints, et cetera, about solving for GTLDs first. But we're not here to solve for GTLDs only. If we can actually accommodate a broader solution or if we can accommodate broader options, then that should be our primary design prerogative rather than intentionally constraining ourselves only to the ICANN problem set. So that's doesn't require a response, but I'm just reiterating that for refreshing our memories of what we're trying to do or how we're trying to go about doing this work. Okay. With that, 1B, I guess, is done. Andy, did you want to take us to 2?
Yeah. So let me bring it back up here. So the requirements in 2B and 2F, and 2B was essentially, these were things we discussed last week, was putting attributes on the requester and having those passed by the requester to the ICANN RDAP proxy. And another part, and I believe this was came out of a discussion about the CPHs knowing who is or having some idea of who is querying them I believe it may be called a record locator or something last week. I just called it a unique identifier. And so the other thing is that in 2F we say, oh, the system must assign each requester a unique identifier. And then those kind of follow into the requirements of 4E and 4F, where we say the system may pass the attributes to the CPH RDAP servers, and then in F we say the system must pass the identifier to the RDAP servers. Any questions about that?
This is Ram. I have a question, Andy and Scott. The for 2E, we're specifying email. Is that the only method that we want to specify?
For 2E?
Yeah.
We could just strike email, Andy, and leave the actual notification form, you know, kind of up in the air.
I'm fine with that. I don't remember exactly where we came up with email. So I'm fine if we just want to say that must provide notifications of the progress. Let me think about this. I mean, would there be a need to actually be as prescriptive as saying email? I mean, do we foresee anyone saying, well, if a notification is posted to a website and you're supposed to go check it via RSS or something, that might be outside of what people think is normal? I don't know. But I'm fine.
Andy, this is Ram. The reason I was focusing on email is because I'm not sure that this is thought through the volume implications. If you specify email and if there are 20,000 requests that come in an hour and you have a system that must provide email notifications of the progress of a request, so that might be a multiplier of that. And I just worry about, you know, the downscale impact of specifying email as a notification mechanism.
Okay, I think that's you're right. That might be something we can't foresee, and so maybe that's a good reason to strike it. So I'm unless I hear objection, I'm going to strike it. So there we go.
I like this form of democracy, Andy. This is good. All right. Are we done with 2 then, guys?
I think we are. And 4.
Okay. Let's carry on then.
So the last one was 7B, which was John Crane's recommendation that we say the SLA commitments must be published in a transparent manner to set expectations. Does anyone have any comments or question about that? Okay, well, Ram?
Thank you.
Sorry,
so, hey guys. Sorry, guys.
I heard two voices, so please disintermediate yourselves.
This is Jordy. I just had a question, and I'm sorry to go back to this. I was trying to find the mute button for 4E. It says the system may pass requester attributes to the CPH RDAP servers. I mean, does that mean that if the RDAP servers, CPH RDAP servers, want those requester attributes, they will request that they are always sent to them from ICANN?
So that's a good question. I believe the way we came down to that was that there would be an agreement, I guess, that ICANN would have with the CPH about whether they get the attributes. And it's up to however that agreement works out. I don't think we're envisioning anything in the protocol itself during the negotiation of the handshake of the protocol or anything, there's like, hey, pass me the axes, right? I believe that's just between the negotiation between the CPH and ICANN itself.
All right. So if the CPH would like to have them, ICANN system pass that to them.
Right. And the idea here being that this is a policy question. We want to design the system so that it can occur, and if policy allows it, then it will occur. Does that make sense?
All right. Yep. Thanks, Andy.
Thanks, Francisco.
I think Andy just covered what I was going to say. Thank you.
Okay, thanks. All right. Let me do this. Let me just go. I'm going to poll each one of you to ask if you have any further questions or comments to the requirements document that's in front of us. And at the end of that poll, I'm hoping that we can say that we can lay this to bed for now. I'm going to start with you, Benedict. If you're speaking,
I'm really sorry, but Mike. My communication, my connection has been too patchy. I'm sorry, I'm not able to. I didn't hear the question.
I was asking if you. This is your opportunity on this call to provide any other comments on the requirements document that we have, the unified requirements, because we're looking to lay the requirements piece to bed here today. So any comments on
sure.
the seven requirements that are there?
Sure. Thanks, Ron. Sorry, I haven't slept much over the last 48 hours, and we've had a few deadlines crash into one another. So apologies in advance. So I wrote some notes and didn't send them. Apologies for that. I wanted to see if we've captured the following, a couple of ideas. Are we ready? So one idea was to, and we talked about in DC, was to classify data elements into types. That means that we could, that gives us some flexibility to change the underlying data structure without a whole load of policy relitigation. In other words, if policy agrees that a certain type of field is permitted to be disclosed to a certain class of request store, then if, for example, we decide to add a social media ID to domain names, for example, then that can be added under the type classification without having to relitigate the whole thing through a policy discussion, a policy process. I don't know exactly, I'm not articulating that terribly well, but I hope that's clear. So just thinking about abstracting away into data types. This is all about, and I guess most of my points are about the underlying data, and so maybe this is one for Scott. Second point, be prepared for heterogeneous contact objects. So there is a proposal to change one of the technical contact objects. So I just wanted to make sure again that we can, if the nature of the data objects changes, that we're prepared to be flexible around those, both at the way that we implement policy in the design of this system. Similarly, the org field, it looks like it's going to be redacted. So are we making sure we're abstracting away there? Is there anybody that wants to comment on that, and if we've answered those in the existing seven recommendations? Thanks.
Thanks, Benedict. Let me start with a couple and then perhaps ask others to add to the responses. As far as the the contact objects, when I hear you say heterogeneous contact objects, what I'm understanding from you is that the data type may be different, and my understanding of RDAP is that RDAP handles that. Similarly, if a field is redacted or if a field is added, that's a fairly straightforward thing to handle just in the protocol in RDAP itself. And our assumption going in here is that this is all RDAP dependent. So in my mind, your latter two questions, I think, are answered by just the functionality of RDAP. The first question that you The first question you asked had to do with whether you think we're ready to classify data elements into types. And I'm not sure I understood the question, so if others understood it better, perhaps you could respond to Benedict's question. Jody?
Say, Ram, I guess what I'm curious about is it up to this group to decide which data elements are public and private?
That's not what I'm proposing, Jody. I'm saying, because of course it's absolutely not up to this group to make that classification. What I'm suggesting is that instead of asking the determination of what I'm basically trying to do is decouple that public-private determination from each individual data element, because at the moment the EPDP is literally going through data element by data element, making that public-private distinction. But what I'm suggesting is that we ask them for a broader decision, or that we obtain a broader decision to say all elements of type name should be classified as private and highly protected. So making sure that if the actual name of that field changes, or if the elements themselves change, that we haven't bound the technical implementation too tightly to a particular set of data elements. In other words, try to group the elements by a type, and then make sure the policy is applied to those rather than directly. Because as soon as the policy is bound to the exact names of the fields, we've concretized a system that shouldn't be concretized. Is that any, like, and then it can't be changed in future because we're not going through the PDP again. Is that clearer?
Steve?
Thank you. I'd like to add some emphasis to that. I've been looking at various policies, in a number of cases, the policies associated with particular registries make a distinction between individuals and non-individuals, and various other terminologies are used. But the distinction has operational meaning in that the non-individuals are, the default is more information is public, and default for the individuals is less information is public, and precisely around the issue of whether the name is made available is dependent upon that distinction. So we definitely do not want to bind the access to the field definition. There has to be something in between that makes that determination.
Thanks, Steve. I see Murray has written something as well. Murray, did you want to speak that into the conversation here?
I've been sort of typing madly. Which thing would you like me to talk about?
Just this particular topic about assignment of attributes being private, et cetera.
Sure. So the different components of the system, the clients, the relayers, the ICANN, all the stuff that we've talked about, if ICANN makes a policy change that alters the state of an attribute from private to public or vice versa, the system needs to learn that. And depending on how we deploy this, in the funnel model, the ICANN being the relay would know about that, and that requires some kind of software configuration change. But we need to pay attention to whether the CPHs need to know which attributes are private and public, or if the clients need to learn that, the mechanism by which they learn, well, if I want this, I need to go over here. If I want that, I can just go over there. Or based on what I heard Benedict say, if there's some need to be able to go directly to the CPHs, they also need to know which things are private and which are public. So whether the mechanism is protocol or something else, the private state of every attribute needs to be accounted for somehow. I don't have a good answer to this yet, but it's something that needs to be worked out.
Benedict?
Something horrible might happen now because I'm, I've got an echo in my ear. 1 second. Well, I'll fix that. Responding to Steve, there's been a lot of discussion about the legal natural distinction, and it looks like that's not going to be mandated in the policy at the moment. However, we would do well to think about a flag or something that, like literally, you know, some sort of flag or a field for that, which the access system could read and implement as part of its logic for authorization about what data is disclosed. With regards to Murray's point, I'm sorry, I've lost my thread. Where were we? No, I'm sorry. Too sleep deprived.
I feel like I can remind you really quickly.
Go ahead.
Go for it.
Okay. So, yeah, sorry. I'm just thinking suppose you're a law enforcement querier and you have some particular attributes that you're interested in, some parts of the system need to know which attributes are private and which are public. And if we were to set out a list of those up front and say, this is the set that's private and this is the set that's not, and that will never change, that gets easy. But if there's ever a policy change that says, just to make something up, the registration date of this domain is now changing from one mode to the other. The various components of the system need to learn that that is now something that has changed state and has different handling, and we need to provide for that somehow. That's especially true in the case of EPDP, what you said, I think, earlier, where EPDP might want to allow for the case where you go directly to the CPHs. Somehow the CPHs need to learn that that particular attribute is now public or is now private and does or does not require particular credentials to get. So that needs to be accounted for somehow.
Oh, and then I've got a secondary requirement to that. I think this is my understanding, that any policy change will be effective retrospectively. So we don't need to store, so that effectively any policy will be implemented at the gating part, and so it will apply to all data accesses, the old or current data. In other words, we're not going to modify what we store. We're not going to. So, for in your case, Murray, in your example, Murray, we're not going to change the way we store the registration date, but we are going to change the way we deliver that and to whom we deliver it, regardless of whether that domain was registered pre the policy or after the policy. Is that everyone's understanding? I think I could probably capture that in some text if we're all okay with that.
Don't see any objections there. Thank you for volunteering to do that. Steve, is that an old hand?
Apologies, it is. I'll take it down.
No trouble. Okay. So that was Benedict. Let me come to you, Murray. The question is, any comments on the requirements?
Yeah, I proposed one. I don't have any objection to what's in 3, but I found that I felt compelled to rewrite it, so I pasted some suggested text into the chat. Apart from that, no, this all looks reasonable to me. One other thing, though, and I don't know if this should appear in our requirements document or if this will come from policy, but what are log retention requirements?
Let's cover them one by one. So let's look at your suggested modification to 3A.
Oh, yeah.
The technical implementation for authorization of requesters should allow for delegation to other authorities off the ability to grant authorization to parties it determines are appropriately
right.
accredited.
This is the delegated accreditation requirement, and I read right. 3A that we have, and I just felt compelled to provide an alternative. It doesn't matter to me which one we go with.
And the primary difference that I see here is that yours is a more general definition requirement as compared to the existing one, which is specific to just ICANN.
And it's fine to me that just mine to say that ICANN can do the delegation.
Right.
This is just, it's a compulsion from writing how many RFCs I've written. Sorry.
Fair enough. Okay. Andy?
I'm a little confused here. And maybe I created this problem, which is even worse. The wording of both of these says authorization, not authentication. And maybe that's why in the original one that's currently in the document we said may must, because maybe Scott and I, when we were going through this, were questioning whether this is something we wanted to do or not. I think we all envision that there are identity providers that are accredited by ICANN, and they do the authentication of who the user is. But authorization
right.
is something ICANN does. Now, we could, I mean, it's very possible for us to create a model where the authorization is also done by a third party. And so I wanted to point that out. I don't think I have, as far as the text that Murray has proposed, I don't think I really have I don't really see any difference between the two. I mean, I'm perfectly fine adopting his text, but they both have this authorization versus authentication.
So that's a great point, and I had not considered the split of the two. Can I propose something to the list rather than taking up time now to sort of hack on this?
Yeah, sounds good, Murray. And just
okay.
briefly, Andy, to refresh our memories, I thought we covered that in our last case to face, and we had said that authorization is what we wanted to address here. Authentication is a separate thing. So I thought that was by design rather than by accident. Jody?
Yeah. One question I have is I want to make sure that CPHs are allowed to authorize or allow people to be able to get to their data, to be able to be, what I want to say, masters of their own destiny as far as who gets the data and be able to authorize someone to be able to get that data. And I'm not sure by the wording. I'm getting lost in the wording here. If these models or if this unified requirements allows CPHs to do that.
Andy?
So let me address what Jody just said first. The requirements here are about CPHs handing all of the data to ICANN, and then ICANN or someone else makes an authorization decision about someone gets to see names versus email addresses, whatever. I don't think any of us are saying this precludes the CPHs from having other arrangements where they're using RDAP or any other system to expose data. So if a CPH is mandated by their local government to do something, I mean, I don't think anyone's saying they can't do that if that's the requirement you're asking about.
Jody, is that responsive right. to your question?
It covers it. Basically, CPHs will be allowed in any model to be able to provide their own authorization to anyone that they see fit.
Well, okay. So you use the word any model. I think in this system, we're asking the CPHs to provide all the data, and the authorization is done at a different done by either ICANN or questioning a third party. In other systems, other models, I guess, it's up to whatever the policies and the legal requirements that the CPH actually had.
All right. Any model is not going to preclude the CPHs from doing that.
I see where you're going. Okay. The reason I had my hand raised was to address what Ram said about authorization versus authentication and where we are. And now I have thoroughly confused myself. This is not a good sign, actually. I was under the assumption that we wanted third-party authentication, and we were questioning whether we wanted third-party authorization. Maybe I was deluded or otherwise just not paying attention at our face-to-face meeting. But I thought we had come down to authentication is what we wanted as far as third parties going. But authorization was we kind of wanted ICANN to do it, but there's still kind of a question in the air. I don't have a strong opinion either way, other than if it's the other way around where someone else is making an authorization decision, but ICANN's making an authentication decision, that does impact the technical, implementation.
Andy, thanks. This is Ram. And I'll put myself in the queue after Scott is done. Scott?
Yeah, I think you're right, Andy. And frankly, one way we could address that is if the may must question we had there, I feel comfortable with just going with a may there. It certainly leaves open possibilities. Or the text that Murray provided, which talks about a should. Of course, the thing about a should is you kind of have to explain consequences are of not doing the should. But either way, it leaves open the possibility.
Yeah, I can reply to that real brief. I just put should in because if we decide we are not going to include this capability, whatever document we produce describing our work should probably explain why we left it out, because we did consider it and we considered it at some length, but ultimately threw the idea away. The public is probably going to ask why. That's all.
Scott, back to you.
No, I'm good with that. But to get to this particular comment, as I said, I think we can either leave 3A as is, just strike the must, or if people feel more comfortable with Murray's wording, replace the text in 3A with Murray's text. I'd be okay with either one.
Okay, gotcha. Francisco?
Thank you, Ram. Just wanted to say I think what we are being asked, I support what Murray said. This is a should requirement for the protocol to support delegation of authorization decisions to other bodies besides ICANN. That's what I interpreted from what Jordan told us last time when we were in DC. There may be good reasons why we think we should not add that, but if there are good reasons, we need to explain that. And I think the should does that. Thank you.
Okay, Francisco, this is Ram. I'm kind of confused. I didn't see a very large difference in the substance between what Murray has suggested versus the language that's there in 3A, but you're seeing some nuance that I'm missing about having the should and taking out ICANN versus having may and leaving ICANN in. So do you want to, can you just explain that? I don't understand the nuance there.
I meant that Murray proposed a different language. I was just referring to the should. In 3A, currently we have may between parentheses must as a question mark. I think it's neither may nor must. It's a should. We should have a protocol that supports delegating authorization. And if for some reason we come up with a good reason on why we should not do that, then we need to explain why not. That's all I was saying. I missed the part where Murray proposed a different language.
Okay, Scott, is that an old hand or a new hand?
Old hand, sorry.
Oh, okay. All right, look, my suggestion at this point is not to get stuck on 3A, and if you want to discuss this further to take it to the list, Jody, I saw your hand come up. If you want to make a brief comment, let's do it, and then let's get to Murray's second point.
No, I'll pass. I'll wait for the list. Thanks.
Okay, thank you. Murray, you had a second point.
Yes, very briefly. Under logging, do we need to specify, or would this fall under policy, what the retention, minimum log retention should be?
This is Ram. My preference is that we should recommend some minimum. I don't know whether we can, we have to do it in such a way that it can be overridden by policy, I guess.
Right. So I'm just inclined to say that policy, like, you leave a bullet point in here that says policy will specify a minimum retention. Implementers should expect to be given some minimum retention requirements.
Yes, I like that. And Andy, I'm assuming that you're taking notes on that, Andy/Scott.
Yeah. In fact, I'll edit it in just a second.
Okay, got it. Let me go to Tomofumi.
Yep. Yeah, everything looks good to me so far. So to the point of data retention, I believe at the early stage we also talked about security requirements for the identity provider, but that I believe that comes later, right? Not here. Or do we want some requirements around security for the something about the security posture? Can you repeat that? I missed it. I believe in the early stage we discussed about there needs to be some level of security for the authentication part, but we don't need to discuss about. I mean, we don't need to add that requirements like security here, right? I just want to confirm that that's the case.
Well, we do have some, and like in 1C where we talk about TLS. Personally, I don't think it's out of the question.
Okay.
Yeah, this is Ram. Tomofumi, I like it too. I think we should have something about security posture, and I'm wondering if you can contribute something about that to the list.
Okay. I will come up with some text.
Okay. Got it. Anything else?
That's it from me. Thank you.
Thanks. Steve? Rocker, if you're speaking,
on you. No, nothing for me.
Got it. Scott?
Yeah, I was going to say I don't have anything else, but Francisco and I are having a quick little discussion in the chat here where the header for Section 3 is identity providers, but the text talks about authorization. We might want to change identity providers to authorization determination or something more generic like that.
I don't see a problem with that. Anything else, Scott?
Nope.
Okay, great. Jorge?
I don't have any objection to the document. I agree.
Thanks. John? John Flynn is typing. He may be... Okay, he says he has no objections. Jody?
I just have an objection on 3, but since we're taking that to the list, I'd like to discuss it there.
Got it. Francisco?
Nothing from me, thank you.
Andy?
I don't have any objections. I do think that while we want to set these aside and start writing some more descriptive text, I feel that these aren't complete and we're going to discover other requirements.
Yeah, you actually stole the words right out of my mouth, Andy. I think this is actually a pretty good start. We've iterated just a couple of times, but I think what we've got to do is really ahead of our meeting next week, what would be really good is if we could all take a look at this and get to the list and, you know, get to a more robust discussion on the list. My expectation is that when we get to D.C. next week, we begin with this, we try and put this to bed, and then start working on the technical model itself. I'm hoping you've all made arrangements for travel and other things like that. We've got Diana and others have already made sent emails about this. And beyond that, there's a draft agenda that has been put out. Please provide comments if you have any on that. And I look forward to seeing you all in person in about a week's time, with the exception of you, Murray.
Yep. Regrets, I'll dial in as much as I'm able.
You got it. All right, folks, I think we're done.
Thanks a lot.
Bye. Thank you. Bye.
Thank you.